Blog Talk Radio.
The number one rated show on Fighting Words Radio Network, All Hail Hair. It's a Thursday night, and I know I'm throwing off a lot of listeners with a special segment of All Hail Hair. Most of you are probably tuning in to the Fighting Words Radio Network to hear rockin' sports. But tonight we've taken the slot over so we could land a very special guest tonight, Mr. Neil Turbin, the lead vocalist of the Death Riders, and of course the original sound, the person who shaped Anthrax. He's like I said, he was the original lead singer of Anthrax, but has moved on with a very solid sounding band behind him. That is the Death Riders. And tonight we'll get into Neil's history with forming the Anthrax sounds, his solo career, and his current band, Death Riders. Originally, we were scheduled to have the guys from Jeff Boy join us, but due to a scheduling problem, they had to reschedule the interview for the next couple weeks. Our guest tonight was already part of the schedule to be on tonight's show, so instead of giving Neil just a few minutes, we decided to expand and give him a lot more, give him a proper show. We started out tonight with the live version of the Howling Furies from Neil Turbin. So without further ado, Neil, how are you?
Great. Thanks a lot for having me, Bob. It's always cool to be on the internet radio, and hello to all the thrashers out there. Thanks for tuning in with the late notice.
And, absolutely.
I'm friends with the guys in Jet Boy and actually their publicist, who's a very good friend of mine, Ray Miller. So that's why I was going to be on the show with Jet Boy, because they're a cool band. They've been around for a long time, and they couldn't make the show. Obviously, we're two different, completely different styles of music, but, you know, it's all rock and roll, right?
Absolutely. And, I love the guys. Last time I had Billy Rowe on the show with us. We had him on for a while and had a lot of fun with the show. But tonight we're here to talk about Neil Turbin and Death Riders. Neil, give us a little background on Death Riders, and I want to get into the show a little bit and get into different areas of it.
Sure. Well, I want to invite any listeners out there to call in and ask any questions they like, because, you know, honesty is policy. I have no secrets and nothing to hide, so, you know, you could fire away. But just to let you know, Death Riders was formed after, you know, the solo album that I did, to put a live band together to support that. So the band has been together now for, I'd say, about almost 6.5-7 years. I mean, it's kind of amazing already. We've been together that long, and we're out there doing it, you know.
Now, you brought up your – go ahead, I'm sorry.
It's a great thing to have, you know, an exciting band to play with, and, you know, guys that are metal people, they're all metal people. It's not like, you know, we have people that are into different music. It's okay to listen to different music and appreciate it, but, you know, truly in the heart of hearts, knowing that metal is what you are about, those are the kind of people that are in this band. So I think that's, you know, just an important aspect of where we're at. And we've been pushing, you know, we keep pushing as a band. So we're pushing on, of course, recording and finishing up our album. I mean, it's something that's been a long time in the works, and, you know, that's still something where we have much work to do. So it won't be out next week, but let's put it this way. When it does come out, it'll be worth having. And, you know, there's not a point in pushing something out there for nothing just to say, oh, we got a new one out this week. You know, because some bands, they churn out albums faster than, you know, babies. And, it's got to be something that's worthwhile. I mean, these days with the internet, I mean, you can download anything. You know,
sure.
People do that. People will download it before it's even out in the record store. You know, and that's an aspect of, you know, recording. It's an aspect of, you know, anything that goes online can basically end up that way. So for us, you know, the real change in the business is to go play live, you know, and to support that and to play for the fans. And that's what I've always been about. That's what Death Riders has always been about. So in, the beginnings of Death Riders, you know, the opportunity was to play a show that was for an award show that I was a part of. And from there, you know, it's just been a matter of keep on pushing to get more gigs. And, you know, we've been to Europe a number of times, three times, and we've been to Japan, been to Mexico a few times. So it's a great thing that we're able to really accomplish some truly remarkable things with this band. I mean, more than I've ever accomplished before as far as getting out there and playing. And of course, you know, people might know or be familiar with me from from some of my past, but truly, you know, coming into the real pinnacle of what I'm capable of doing here with Death Riders. And of course, you know, there's much opportunity ahead, and, you know, we're going to keep on rocking until we're, you know, way past the grave. Let's put it that way.
There you go. Now, anybody out there wants to call in, the number is 347-202-0832. Give us a call, and you can speak to Neil Turbin. Neil, you mentioned, you know, you started out, you know, with your solo career soon after you left Anthrax. How did you shape up your solo career? What were you looking for to when you became a solo artist? What kind of sound were you out there looking for?
Well, to be honest, Bob, I was never looking to become a solo artist. You know, I never
right.
I never really considered you know, leaving a band behind and trying to be the center of attention. It never really was. You know, I've always been a team player. I think the difference between what some people are interested in and what others are interested in, I'm more interested about the art, the music, the quality of the material, you know, putting out something that's just, you know, strong on all ends. You know, it's like if one part is weak, then that brings down the whole show. You know, if one instrument is weak, then it pulls down everybody else. So, you know, I'm all about having, you know, strength of people that can really lock in, really, you know, have a chemistry and play well together. And, you know, not to say that you have to love everybody and that everybody's going to love everyone. You know, even bands that you think are, you know, that have been together a long time that you think, you know, get along really well. I mean, it's tough out there. I mean, there's a love-hate thing that happens with pretty much any relationship, you know, let alone any band. And, you know, every relationship has...
There for a minute, sure. I thought you were talking about my marriage, but go ahead.
Well,
I'm sorry.
Well, exactly.
<I'm just kidding.
laughs> Well, you know, it could be. It doesn't have to be, you know, even that type of relationship. It could be,
right.
You know, with friends. It could be with, you know, coworkers. It could be with, you know, people that you have to deal with that aren't even either. You know, they just, you know, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not as good. But the idea is that if there's a harmony, if there's some kind of a, you know, if you could strike the right, I don't want to pun a phrase, but strike the right chords together, you know, it's just that balance, you know. And that happens sometimes, you know, push-pull type of thing. And in other cases, it's just pure luck, you know. Things just happen to work, and the people are just not, you know, on the same page, to be quite honest.
Sure.
And then there's people that it really works out well with from a standpoint of relationship, but there's no harmony with the music, you know, this, you know, not having compatibility, musical incompatibility. So I think that, you know, I've had some good compatibility in the music department with some bands and folks, but unfortunately in the music business and the entertainment business, you know, it's a pretty raunchy business. I'd say it's probably a lot more raunchy. You probably have a lot more raunchy people in the entertainment business than probably in porn, you know.
Wow.
Not that that's not entertainment for some people, but the idea is that, you know, you have, I mean, if you go into the business world, you'll meet a lot less crooks, a lot less, you know, people that are preying on naive people, you know. It's like, I mean, maybe that's a strong thing to say, drug dealers and you know, porn brokers, I mean, but in the rock and roll business, I mean, it's pretty, you know, you got some people that, everyone loves music, right? So there's all
sure.
kinds of people that prey on people. And to me, I just, you know, that's what I despise the most is having people that, you know, they're not in it because of the beauty of the art. And art is a beautiful thing. It's something that we have as a gift that is something that we can share with each other and we can communicate across all barriers and all lines of communication. And, you know, that's why I'm doing the show with Metal Fanaz, which is coming up on next Tuesday. It's called Metal
right.
Revolution for Iran. And the reason that I'm behind that is because, you know, people should have the freedom to choose whatever music they want to listen to, whether it be metal or whatever it is. They should have that right to be able to, you know, make their own decision about what music they can have or that they can play. And I think
right.
I think it's a crime. You know, it's a human rights violation, a human rights an ethics crime to say to, you know, people that you can't have an instrument, you can't play this on your instrument, you know. You can play that chord, but you can't play this chord. This is a taboo chord, you know. That's just ridiculous. And unfortunately, that's the world we live in. You know, there's you know, people that, you know, just don't, they just don't have, you know, they don't give people the dignity of accepting their human rights. You know, they don't accept a lot of things. So I think that without getting into a political conversation, I mean, it's really important to, I think, just focus on what the real issue is from a musical standpoint, and that is giving people the ability to, you know, express themselves musically. You know, where is the crime? I mean, we had that problem here in the U.S. when they try to censor, you know, lyrics and music and all that
right.
sort of thing. You know, back in the 80s, there was a big
right.
push for that. And it's just, you know, we're talking about taking a big step back to the Dark Ages. And unfortunately, in some parts of the world, it still is the Dark Ages.
Right.
And hopefully it's not a place that we're going to enter back into, you know, because it's a very possible reality to enter back into the Dark Ages. I mean, you just can't take these things for granted. So if it's happening in one part of the world, you know, it's very possible that, you know, that part of the world can be in charge of other parts of the world if they happen to, you know, take over or something. So, I mean, don't take it for granted. And that's why people in heavy metal, you know, it's a revolutionary type of music. It's always been. So I think it's great to embrace this. And, you know, I've always been friends with or in my life with some very great Persian people. So I have nothing but respect for people. I can't say that every person from a particular place is, you know, my favorite, but, you know, I think we all have experiences and we all have to, you know, put aside experiences or whatever prejudices people have against different people and that they associate, you know, different things, events or whatever, you know, and just look at it for purely what it is. And that is, you know, it's truly a crime to, you know, disallow people to listen to heavy metal or to play it, you know. I mean, it
right.
doesn't mean that everybody's worshiping, you know, something evil or bad, you know. And it doesn't mean that it has anything to do with worship. It has nothing to do with, you know, we're not even talking about religion. But, you know, once religion becomes part of it, then you can look at something, you know, religion is responsible for more deaths than cancer. So.
You're right. Absolutely. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, more wars. There's more wars about religion than anything else.
You know, I think those people that are busy with religion, if they really want to believe in something, you know, how about spending that time and go cure cancer? Use the time usefully and all that energy. But anyway, back to the point, and that is rock and roll, man.
Absolutely. Now, you talk about, you know, we talk about you being a solo artist, and as a solo artist, you were very lucky to have been able to work with one guy, I believe, was a friend of yours. The other guy who became a good friend of yours, the one I'm talking about is Rhett Forrester from Riot. You actually worked along with him in a band called Virgin Steel, or you were with the band Virgin Steel while he was a lead singer. What actually did you do with Rhett?
Well, that's an interesting question. Actually, I didn't ever play in a band with Rhett, so I'll just clarify that. But, you know, Rhett was a friend of mine back in New York, and that was right there during the early days, you know, when I was, I would say right around 1980, 81, 82, 83 time frame, 84 even. And actually 82 to 84, that's to be more accurate. And what happened is I was a big fan of Riot. They were a New York heavy metal band, one of the great heavy metal bands from New York. And, you know, at the time, I had originally been a fan of Guy Speranza, who was on the Fire Down Under record, and of course Nerita and you know, other great albums by Riot. And so I was a real big fan of Guy Speranza, and I was kind of really bummed out when they, you know, I heard they replaced him, you know, because that was
right.
you know, one of the most you know, the greatest benchmarks in heavy metal and one of the, you know, true great albums of American heavy metal at that time and still now. And you know, just kind of ironically, you know, I went to a show and, you know, I followed Riot and, you know, I don't know if I actually got to hear the singer at that time. I think the album that they were coming out with Red on it was pretty new. And in those days, everything was vinyl, and, you know, we weren't wealthy with money pouring out of our pockets to go buy albums. I mean, they were expensive, and, you know, you had to save up a long time to get the next one, you know. And it wasn't
right.
like every day. It was more like maybe you get one once a month, maybe, you know, depends on, you know, a lot of things. It was tough times. So basically, I went and saw Rhett. He played on this Halloween show with, it was Riot, Anvil, and Raven. And I was just a big fan, you know, and I was right up there in front, and, you know, I was totally into that show. That was actually a show that was put on by Rock and Roll Heaven, the infamous. And so I got to meet Rhett at another show, because Riot did another show. I think I was there. I don't know if I even met him at that show. I think I did, but there was another show that, you know, when we became a little bit more friendly with Rock and Roll Heaven, which is John Z,
mm-hmm.
Johnny Z, you know, Rhett was, you know, Rhett was a real personable guy, so he wasn't afraid to talk to the fans. You know, he's not one of these guys that, you know, is too busy to sign autographs or he's too busy to be real. He was totally real. I mean, just as real as it gets. And, you know, so I just, you know, I admired him. I mean, the guy is a great frontman. I mean, he was a great singer, great frontman, totally different than Guy Speranza. You know, more of a heavy metal type of voice, and Rhett was a little bit more a soulful kind of a singer. So, anyway, you know, talking with Rhett, he was just really cool, and then, you know, we became friends from there. You know, I just kept in touch with him. And I had a tape of this concert that Rhett did when he first joined Riot, and it was at my father's place in Long Island, New York. And I taped it off the radio with a cassette recorder.
I remember doing that.
Yeah, and it came out really good. And it was you know, one of those special radio shows, like a King Biscuit type of show that they had,
right.
That was one in Long Island. And he didn't even have a copy of it. So I was really honored that I was able to give him a copy of this show on the radio that was just, you know, it was a great show. I was very impressed. You know, he just, you know, you could tell the vibe over the radio. I mean, how he handled the crowd and just how everything was. And it was a lot of excitement and, you know, just a really on fire type of performance. And, you know, playing the old Riot songs that Guy Speranza sang, and he did a great job of it. And, you know, Rhett really was truly a front man, you know, really had that kind of charisma and persona. And he was trouble. I mean, let me tell you, he unfortunately that, you know, that was just part of his nature. He was a really great guy, but, you know, there was the other side where it was like, you know, Rhett managed to find himself in situations. And anyway, I remember hanging out with Rhett one time with myself and Rhett, and we were in Greenwich Village, New York, in the Village, near St. Mark's Place, and then we were down by you know, 8th Street and down by CBGB's. And I remember going into Great Gildersleeve's. It was me and Rhett and Ross the Boss from Manowar. And I just thought to myself, wow, I was like, wow, this is just fucking cool.
Yeah.
This is cool as hell to be with these guys and, you know, that they would take me into their crowd. But that's what New York was. You know, we just rubbed elbows, whatever. You know, we're just hanging out, and, you know, hanging out with Rhett in New York is just something I'll never forget. I mean, I would go over to his place. He used to live in Astoria and Jackson Heights, and two different places. He didn't stay in one place very, very long, but, you know, we hung out, and he eventually referred me a guitar player that he knew to fill in once Greg Walls left Anthrax. Now, Greg was the guitar player that was in Anthrax, the lead guitarist when I joined the band in 82, and Greg was, you know, just, you know, warp speed guitar player. He played so fast. You know, we wanted him to slow down at times so he'd play a few more notes, but it was so fast. And, you know, the guy is a great guy, great guitar player, and really someone that I enjoyed working with. And anyway, we'll get back to that topic, but, you know, Greg left the band right after Greg D'Angelo, who was the drummer. He joined White Lion, of course, and he actually joined Cities when he left Anthrax.
Oh, wow, okay.
So what happened is, you know, Greg, both Gregs, they just, you know, they had run-ins with someone in the band who basically wanted to, you know, tell them what they should play or what they should do or how they should see things. And I guess they didn't quite, you know, go with that. And I just couldn't understand why they wanted to leave, because we knew that the band was moving forward. It's just that, you know, we just felt we were going forward. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not like, oh, well, playing with these guys is going to take us forward. It was just, you know, there was an energy. There was some sort of a weird chemistry that made it work. So anyway, back to Rhett, you know, we had this guitar player for a few shows. His name was Bob Berry, and he was a really, really good guy. And, you know, it was just his style was more, a little bit more Southern than it was thrash. You know what I mean? It wasn't really a speed metal or like a super warp speed guitar player, which is what we needed at that point in time. We needed someone that was, you know, going to be more like a Randy Rhoads on steroids. And that, and at that point in time, you know, we try to figure out who is even on that level, you know, that's going to help take us to the next place. And, you know, we came up with a guy that worked on 48th Street. That was Dan Spitz. And, you know, he was not in Overkill. I know there's a lot of press out there that says, oh, he was in Overkill. I don't know what happened with Overkill.
Okay.
I talked with Rat Skates, who I saw at the opening in Los Angeles for Get Thrashed, that was his movie with Rick Ernst. And I was there at the opening, actually with a very dear friend who's passed away, Michelle Meldrum. It was really cool to see her there. It's the last time I saw her. And also Gene Hoagland, which was awesome to be with them. And unfortunately, Michelle passed, and that's a whole other story, but she's a great girl. You know, back to the point about Rhett and Bob Berry. Bob Berry, he just didn't fit, you know, what the band was about. And so we've got Dan Spitz, and it was kind of like, you know, me talking with Scott, saying, how are we going to get this guy? Scott basically, you know, he couldn't really get too far. He was friendly with him because he worked at a jewelry store his father owned, or for jewelry business on the street right next to 48th Street, which is, you know, where all the music stores are in Manhattan, or were.
Right.
And what happened at that point is I went to, you know, down the 48th Street into Manhattan because I lived in Queens. So took the subway into Manhattan and went up there to go check out the music stores and then go talk to Dan Spitz. So Danny was over at Rudy's Music Stop on 48th Street. Some of you old-time guitar folks might remember that. I don't even know if they're still over there, but it was a damn cool store. So anyway, Dan, you know, he was just kind of standoffish, and, you know, we tried to say, hey, man, you got to check out the band and at least, you know, come and play with us. And it was just a matter of convincing him to come down, and then once he did that, it's like, you know, we had walls of Marshall cabinets up to the ceiling. We had, you know, Scott went and bought all of Gene Simmons' bass cabinets. So,
nice.
I mean, that was a PA we were using. So, I mean, it didn't hurt to have that gear. And I guess Dan Spitz was a gear person, too. So he liked gear. So it was all about, you know, who can have the most toys, I guess. Me, I didn't have any Marshall cabinets or any Kiss cabinets from Gene Simmons. So I just had, you know, my cowboy boots and my cowboy hat, and that's about it.
Nice.
So it was cool. I mean, we put it all together, and, you know, when Dan joined the band, then, you know, things started to go in a direction that we wanted it to from a standpoint of, you know, the style of guitar playing, you know. And he did a lot of pentatonic scales, a lot of, you know, he wasn't quite Randy Rhoads or anything, but, you know, it was suitable for what we were doing. And, you know, at that point in time, Scott had, you know, after Greg D'Angelo left the band, he kind of moved into a position of buddying up with Charlie Benanti. And him and Charlie basically, you know, would spend lots and lots of time together. So, you know, I saw this kind of stuff happening beforehand with other people. And, you know, once that happened, there was just secret meetings, secret, you know, relationship established, secret bond and, you know, agendas. And unfortunately, you know, that's just the way it is and the way it turned out. But nevertheless, it was a really good experience to work with some of the cool people like Greg Walls
sure.
and Greg D'Angelo, and they actually came to our whiskey show when Death Riders played the whiskey. I got a picture on our Facebook of the three of us together right outside the whiskey. So that was really cool to have them there, and they both enjoyed the show, and it was really good to see them. And that's the way normal people are. I mean, they don't have all kinds of issues and hang-ups and grudges, and all that. But
sure.
These guys, we didn't always see eye to eye. We didn't always love each other. It wasn't always like that. And not that we love each other now or hate each other. It's just that, we can be men and stand together and laugh about it, And
gotcha.
And that was really cool. I mean, it was a lot of fun to see them, and they enjoyed it. And, I hope that we get to see them again soon. And what was also cool is I just saw Carl Kennedy just this past weekend, who produced the Fistful of Metal album. And, of course, Carl's responsible. He's even responsible for putting Joey Belladonna in the band. The band was in a weird situation. I mean, Carl told me the story. It was we were there at dinner, and it was news to me because we were sitting there, and, he was telling another friend who's a fellow drummer, and, because he asked, well, what happened, and it was kind of funny because they had this singer after I was out of the band, and this is, months after I was out. They were already recording their album in upstate New York at the same location that they did Fistful of Metal. And, I mean, this guy was the singer they had. And I'm not trying to say anything bad. I mean, this is just repeating. I'm just mimicking what I heard, maybe
okay,
not word
great.
For word. But what he said is that, the guy was busy partying. And he was partying pretty hard. I mean, I won't say what he was partying on, but he was partying pretty hard. And it's like he was up there for a week, and they tried to record him. And Carl just said, what are you doing? I mean, this is not a joke. This is serious. And it ain't happening. And then, I heard that the band called up the management or the record label and said, get rid of him. And that's what happened. And then Carl was tasked when they were in the studio with having to find a singer at that point. And what's interesting is that the singer, who turned out to be Joey Belladonna, I guess he was in cover bands in upstate New York. And it was interesting because, I guess when Joey was first there and, the guy, he was an okay singer and all. But the point is that he, doing the covers and stuff, but he had never sang with double bass being so fast. He was singing type of music that was not really like what thrash metal or speed metal was about. So I guess it took him quite a while to kind of get the hang of it. So I guess that's a story much different than what people know about. But I just thought it was interesting. It was interesting for me to hear it for the first time.
Sure, absolutely.
It's kind of like, watching a show or listening to a show and hearing about, a perspective that you just never heard before. But I thought it was quite interesting that, they just hated me, that's all. They wanted, Charlie wanted to write the songs, Scott wanted the control, he wanted the attention, and, I just wanted to be part of something and make sure that the quality of the songs and the direction was, respectable and awesome. And
sure.
to me that would be like the band like Accept, like Saxon, Wheels of Steel, like Accept, Restless
right.
and Wild. That would be like Thin Lizzy, Live and Dangerous. That would be like, Judas Priest, Screaming for Vengeance. I mean, Iron Maiden, Number of the Beast, Heaven and Hell, Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
I can keep going. I mean, Motorhead, Ace of Spades, Iron Fist. I mean, these are the things that I look up to. And Riot, of course, Fire Down Under, and pretty much all their albums are terrific. And, there's a lot of other bands, but I mean, these are some bands that really had, made their mark. I mean, I don't need to say how great they were and are, but
yeah.
that's the kind of band that I saw, the band that I would be singing for. And, I just didn't see it being a comedy act or, some other type of, ridiculous representation of something that is not, native to what I'm about, And actually, go ahead.
We actually have a caller named Steve from Utah that wants to ask you a question. You mind if I bring him on real quick?
Bring him right on and let him ask what he wants to ask.
Steve, go ahead.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, hi, how are you?
Hey, what's happening out there in Salt Lake or wherever you're at?
Yeah, it's Salt Lake. Yeah, it's a little warm out here, but it's nice. I imagine you've been through here a couple times.
Well, I'd like to come back. I haven't played out there, but well, I know it's a good place, and I know they've got some really a lot of fans out there that like the heavy stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Neil, I'm a big fan. I've been a fan of yours for a long time. Where can I hear the new Death Riders CD?
Well, you say when or where?
when and where? Yeah, both.
Well, I know that that's a pressing question, and I'll be honest with you, Steve. You know, it's something that's not completed. The songs are completed. There's one song that's being finished up. And, you know, we're playing those songs live, just so you know. And,
okay.
You know, we're not playing every single one of them. I mean, fans want to hear what they want to hear. So, you know, we're not just going out there and playing all the most current songs. Because, you know, people want to hear some other material that I have in my, you know, in my career. So,
right.
You know, I could play what I want to play, or I can play with, you know, people want to hear, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if I want people to come to the shows, I guess I have to compromise a little bit. And it's not really selling out. It's just, you know, compromising like, hey, this is what the fans want to hear. Let's, you know, this is what the crowd reacts to. You know, obviously that would only be smart to do that. And what also keeps the flow. So to answer your question, I'd like to have the damn thing out tomorrow. But in reality, you know, if I was to put out something tomorrow, it would sound like crap because it's not finished. It's not mixed. It's not, you know, some things need to be recorded. We had a drummer that, you know, some tracks haven't been replaced with the drums, you know. And unfortunately, that drummer didn't play the way that, you know, that we need to deliver the music. So, and also the way that we recorded, you know, some of the guitars, we need to retrack them. So there's some things that we need to do. We have vocals for a lot of songs. I mean, it's not a traditional recording process because now we're in the age of technology where it's not like 1982 where you just go into a studio with all your guys and you just knock it out in a week and then put the layers on top of it. Well, it's kind of sort of like that, but, you know, you don't have to do the drums first. You can do them last. I mean, it's probably not great to do it that way, but, you know, when you have good enough musicians, you can record guitars and vocals first. You can do things like that. And you can do it with a click track. So, I mean, these are things that are possible. That's the way it works. And, you know, the type of music that I sing on, I mean, I'm not your – I mean, I have my own studio. I mean, I don't just lay down two tracks of vocals. I sing multiple tracks of everything. And, you know, I'll sing it till it's, you know, in the game, you know. And it's not about being a perfectionist, but it's about either it's in the game or it's not. You know when your shit is on and you know when it's not quite where it needs to be. And, you know, I mean, what do we want to settle for? I know the fans don't want to settle for something that's going to be short of the mark. They'll be very disappointed if they wait a long time and it's, like, not up to par. So we've all waited a long time. And, you know, the reality is, I'm sorry to say that it's not going to be very soon, but, you know, it'll happen in our lifetime, I sure hope.
I hope so, too.
Yeah,
no,
but I mean,
you know, the stuff I've heard is really, really tight. I mean, you guys are, you know, it's like stepping back in time with all those great bands from yesteryear. I mean, I'm just glad that the music that you play has been viable that long. I mean, and it's still kick your ass, you know, bust your eardrums, great music.
Well, that's appreciated to hear your, you know, your feedback, Steve. I mean, you know, a lot of times on interview shows, you know, on radio shows. I mean, you have all kinds of folks, people that are just like, well, I like this other singer, so I'm going to call up and heckle this guy, you know, or I'm going to call up and ask some really bad questions. And I mean, your question's really a really fair question, but it's probably the hardest question, you know, because it's like being asked by your girlfriend, you know, when are we getting married? You know, when are you gonna get serious? You know, I mean, it's that kind of a question. It's like, you just can't, I mean, you could try to squirm around from that, but it's like, well, honey, we really don't need to get married now, do we? Because that's going to change the way our finances work with the taxes and everything. And then, you know, But yeah, maybe there'd be some health insurance, maybe. You know,
yeah.
I mean, you got to think about these things and figure out what's going to be best. I mean, as far as this goes, we're trying to get it done. We're trying to get to the finish line. There's just life that's in the way. You know, people's schedules. I mean, it's a busy time. It's hard out there, and you know, we're doing our best, but we're going to get it out there. And I can assure you, we want to put some advanced tracks up, so you can definitely keep in touch with me on ultimatemetal.com, which is our message board on Facebook. If you can add Death Riders group, because
I looked you up.
Yeah, my individual profile. I mean, you get 5,000 people, and it's not like I have I can count the friends on maybe half of one hand, true friends. But you know, somehow I got 5,000. You know, I mean, it's not like I'm that popular. I'm just, you know, I mean, it's like MySpace. You just add people, they add you, and that's what happens. But you know, how many people do you actually like spend your weekends with or go to dinner with? You know what I mean?
Right. Well,
I mean,
I'm hoping to see you out here in Salt Lake sometime soon.
Well, that's awesome. We definitely have to come out there. I know that there's been some thrash bands touring out there. And, you know, the hardest thing for us, besides, of course, trying to get our album out in a timely manner and get everything done, is to, get out there and be funded to come out to different states. And, of course, you know, with the right sponsorship, I mean, you know, we could fly anywhere if they bring us in. And obviously to get a tour, I mean, there's a lot of money and a lot of business that needs to be committed behind that. So to get to Salt Lake, I mean, I've been to Salt Lake, a few times. I just haven't played there. So we hope to come out there, and hopefully the opportunity will present itself. But we keep pushing, man. And we're, you know, we've been out to Arizona and Nevada and Texas. So, you know, you guys are right, you know, kind of right in between there. So, I mean, it's going to happen. It's just a matter of, you know, how soon we can make it happen.
Well, Neil, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. I really do.
Hey, thanks for calling in, Steve. Much appreciated, and stay thrashing, brother.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right.
And Steve, just to let you know, in about 15 minutes, we'll be playing the brand new song actually from Death Riders, Crucification. So we'll be bringing that to you. Let me get a little bit into the band. I was about to say Crucification, Death Riders. Neil, you told us a little bit about the band, how it was formed. Talk about some of your bandmates in the band.
Sure. Let me just clarify one quick thing, and that is Crucifixation.
Sure.
I know people not only mispronounce song titles, but they mispronounce my name. They can't spell it, and, you know, that's okay. I don't care, you know. I mean,
okay.
If they don't know my name, they can say, hey, you, right? I don't care.
Right.
Hey, yo, bro, you. Yo, with the hair, man, you over there. Yo, rocker. You know? So anyway, that's one thing. And then Crucifixation actually was a song that I recorded back in 2005 at Mark Bowles' studio. I worked with Mark, who engineered it with me and helped me out. And it was really great working with Mark Bowles, because that man is an amazing singer, just, one of the greatest singers. And, you know, that was for an album that Jack Frost put out, his solo album, which was called Out in the Cold. So that song's just a nice
oh, wow.
song that you can play. It's a good quality song, and I guess hopefully it'll tide people over for a few minutes. I mean, it's not brand new or anything, but, you know, the Death Rider songs that are out there, that are online, that are on our MySpace, is Crimson Warrior and Riders of the Apocalypse. Those are some songs that have been out there in a pretty rough mix fashion. I mean, when we say rough mix, it's like really rough. So we really don't want to put stuff out there that's going to, you know, that's not going to sound up to par. You know, it's not going to have the sonic quality. It's not just, you know, it's not about what my vocals sound like. It's about what the whole song sounds like. It's kind of like Fistful of Metal. You know, it sounded like it was recorded in a trash
sure.
can. So, you know, there's some albums out there that just, yeah, there's some albums out there that sound nice. You know, you put them on, they sound big and badass, like an Ozzy album, anyone that Ozzy's put out.
Right,
I mean,
you could hear
the production. You can hear that it sounds, you know, big and, you know, bold and all that. And you know, that just comes from having the right people, you know, that know what the hell they're doing. And when you have people that are inexperienced or people that don't know their equipment or don't have, you know, the right equipment or don't really know, I mean, when you have top-notch people working for you, well, that's what you get. You get what Ozzy puts out. And, you know, or bands like that. I mean, I'm not just picking on Ozzy. I mean, there's certainly other great, you know, sounding albums. Like another great one is, you know, the Saxon album or any Halford album.
Yeah.
You know, the Saxon album that Into the Labyrinth.
Right.
That was their last album, and it was a terrific sounding album. You know, really, really well done. And, I mean, that's the kind of quality you got to have. I mean, you know, people don't want to listen to bulk, you know, just to, you know, shitty sounding quality. So when people say to me, you know, what's, you know, when's your album coming out? Well, we want to make sure that it sounds to that quality level, you know, not just the recording of the instruments, but the way that everything's recorded. And, you know, working with someone like a Mayor Applebaum, he's a gentleman that masters a lot of the albums that you hear. He's done, you know, quite a number of things, like for Halford, he's done his work. He's done a lot of work with Roy Z and a lot of other names and, you know, a lot of other people in other music realms. You know, he's someone who does mastering, and that's, you know, part of, you know, the process. So I just want to bring that out there and say that, you know, there's different pieces to that puzzle to really make it sound, you know, at a level where, you know, you can go out there and conquer the world. And, you know, for us, we have the songs, we can go out there and play, but, you know, we got to get it done. I mean, all it takes is money, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's, and there's plenty of that right now, huh?
that's what they say at the drag strip, how fast you want to go. And then they say open your wallet, right?
That's right.
How much money you got? You know, you want to buy these parts? Well, that only cost you, you know, 50 grand if you want to go that fast. But back to the question that you had, which is about the band members. Let me talk about them. And
sure.
In the band, we've got some really dynamic people. Mike Guerrero, who is a, you know, true brother of steel and a, you know, great guitar player. He used to play for the band Hellion,
mm-hmm.
with Anne Boleyn. And he, you know, toured with them. He toured in Japan with them. I mean, he's played in his own band, Mike Guerrero Project, that played in Japan and Asia 11 times. He's played in Europe, and he's, you know, done guitar clinics with Michelangelo Buttvideo. And, you know, he was doing all this stuff before he joined Death Riders. So Mike Guerrero, he is a, also known as a tapping ninja. So he's been great to have in the band. You know, Mike is just a, you know, always a positive force and always a, you know, up person and so upbeat person and someone that really, you know, the fans really love him. And, you know, he's really a kick-ass guitar player, and, you know, working with him is a pleasure. And, you know, we also work with, in the band, the bass player, Sandy K. Vasquez. I've known Sandy for a long time when I first was out in California. In you know, to permanently come out here in 85. I met up with Sandy and a good friend, Earl Mendenhall, who are in the band Bloodlust. So me and Sandy,
gotcha.
Have always been friends, and, you know, we see each other from time to time. And, you know, he played on the solo album, Threatcon Delta. He also, you know, I auditioned for Bloodlust when I, you know, was first out here. So that's kind of the history behind that. And, you know, I used to go see Sandy's bands that he was in. And then, you know, the opportunity just happened to come about that he played on the solo album. And, you know, that didn't make him become part of the band, but it was actually after we went to Sweden. And the bass player, you know, what was really weird about that is we had this fill-in bass player. And the bass player that we wanted to have, who was actually playing with Yngwie Malmsteen now, who did jam with us, Bjorn England, and that was back then. He, you know, because... He just had a really good, you know, good stage presence, good player. You know, he's playing with Robin McCauley's band, Bleed. And anyway, Bjorn wanted to charge us too much money to rehearse. And I'm like, you know, dude, you know, we can't pay you this amount to go rehearse. And then, you know, we're going to play over at Sweden Rock. And what's funny is Bjorn ended up going to Sweden Rock, and he was there in the audience. You know, he could have been on stage playing Sweden Rock. I don't know if he's played Sweden Rock with Yngwie, but that's his country. So you'd think that he would have made the decision to at least go play the show and then quit if he didn't want to, if you want to get paid for everything, every moment. You know, in this business, you do it for the love of metal. You can't get paid for everything. You know, you can't get paid for, I mean, some people can. You know, some people get paid for everything.
They're the top 10%, though.
I mean, go play with Madonna. Get in Madonna's band if you want to get paid for everything. I mean, there's got to be some hard work. You know, you get there. And some bands, you know, they're lucky.
I would jump head first off the stage into the concrete if I was playing with Madonna. Sorry, just not a big fan of hers.
Right. But hey, at least it pays the bills, you know. And
it does, absolutely does. Yeah.
I guess maybe you can interview the person that does play with Madonna, because I'm sure they're out there. And you know, maybe it's not all, you know, maybe it's not quite all as rosy as you might think. I mean, I'm sure it's a very professional situation when you play with someone that's, you know, playing big places, and they got a lot of business going on behind them. You know, there's definitely someone watching the books and, you know, keeping track of the hired help, and that's what you're considered if you're in a band like that, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
You know, unless they really love you and they want to keep you around. But in this band, you know, there is no hired help. I mean, this is a band. This is, everyone is family, and, you know, everyone gets treated equally. Of course, you know, when it comes time to get paid, when it comes time to be, you know, treated, you know, it's just, you know, we're equal people, you know. It's like there can't be a special person and everyone else is not as special. It can't be like that. You can't have people that are behind something. I mean, it just doesn't work like that. And that's never been my direction anyway. So I'm just not about that. And, you know, that's why it's funny when you said, you know, when you wanted to be a solo artist. Well, I never really wanted that, you know.
Right.
It's much better to be part of something than to be the guy that takes all the heat, you know, and to be the focus of everything. But,
no, I know,
you know, the other guy. Sure.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I just wanted to say the other guys in the band. So Sandy
is
great. He's on the bass. And then there's Dave Watson, who came from the band Hyrax. And Dave, you know, I've known Dave for a long time as well. And Dave, you know, plays guitar. So he holds up, you know, he holds up the fort along with Mike Guerrero on guitar. And then Dave Chedrick, who also, you know, he's an old school drummer. He studied with Carl Kennedy, believe it or not, back in Pennsylvania.
Wow.
And he actually used to be in a band called Graphic Violence, which is a pretty popular band from the old days back in Pennsylvania. And, you know, he's also been, you know, in some other bands, including, you know, Hyrax was actually, that's where I met him. He was playing with Dave Watson in Hyrax. So, ironically, you know, we have two members that used to be in Hyrax in the band. And, you know, interestingly enough, we played Thrash Against Cancer in 2005, and I had a different group of guys in Death Riders, and, you know, they were in Hyrax. So, I mean, it's good to play with people that are, you know, that you can have a rapport and a chemistry with that are in your age group, you know. I mean, I guess it's cool to have younger or older people, but I think it's good if you have people that are kind of on the same page, and it just keeps it more realistic, you know. And I've worked with, you know, people that are like, I work with shit hot guitar players that were 16 years old. I gave people a chance. You know, it's just really hard when you're coming from a different place. You know what I mean? It's too far apart. So I think it's really great, the lineup that we have, because like I said, in the first place, we have all metal guys. So everyone is kind of part of that. And then, you know, Dave Chedrick, I mean, he's got this drum kit that he custom welded himself. That's out of, you know, chain link. He's very proud of it. So, you know, we've been on the road playing this year, California Screaming 2010. We've done over 20 shows, and, you know, we're playing the Whiskey 7 times this year, which is pretty cool. You know, it's a really nice venue, and the fact that, you know, we can call it home is really cool, because we know there's been quite a few famous people that have been through the Whiskey.
Sure, absolutely.
And, you know, not only are we playing there this Sunday with Dave Lombardo from Slayer's band, Film, and Metal Sinaz, who's awesome. And, you know, we're also playing with Dave Lombardo's band on Tuesday at the Aura nightclub out in Studio City. So we're doing that Metal Revolution for Iran, and Dave Lombardo's band is also part of that.
Wow.
So so that's pretty cool. And actually, after that, we have some other shows, but one of the other shows that we do have, you know, the Whiskey's asked us to come back and, you know, do some headlining on a weekend there, and, you know, it's tough out here in Hollywood, let me tell you. So it's pretty cool to get it, you know, to get invited for that. And then we also have a show there in January with Michelangelo Badio. So we're doing a
Nitro.
Yeah, we're doing a special thing with Michael, who we've played with for the last 3 years. We've done an event for, you know, during the NAMM show. So it's a special metal jam that we do. And, you know, it's really exciting to play with Michael because he's probably, you know, in the top handful of players in the whole universe
Absolutely.
That are as good as he is. You know, he's just,
Absolutely.
He's so accurate. He's so perfect of a guitar player. I mean, he's fast and all, but, and amazing. You know, his speed is so amazing and clean, but he's just so accurate, and he's just such a natural player. I mean, it's just a true pleasure to play with Michelangelo. And I do want to mention also that in collaborating, in writing, you know, I've been working with Jonas Hornqvist out of Sweden, and he is also, you know, of the same caliber that Michelangelo is. I mean, he is just truly a scary monster of the guitar. You know, he is just, I mean, he's got two guitar books out in Swedish. They're being translated over, and he's also a full Fender endorsee.
Wow.
For Scandinavia. And, you know, I hope that Jonas can come over to the U.S. and join Death Riders and Michelangelo and play with us at that Whiskey event. You know, that special jam that we're going to do. So I know that there's some other bands that, you know, have been part of it in the past. And, you know, we played the Black Castle a few years in a row for that event. And then we also played out in Riverside. So this year we're going to be doing it at the Whiskey. And, you know, it's just an exciting for the fans. And we love playing with Michael. And, you know, he's been playing our songs. I mean, the last time he was out here, he played I'm 18, and he played Panic, and he played Death Rider, and we played some Deep Purple songs. So, I mean, it's, you know, he might end up playing our whole set, you know, and he's going to do his set, too.
You know, Nitro was one of my favorite bands from the 80s. I don't think they were very well understood, you know, Jim Gillette and him. I don't think they were very well understood. But I was a huge fan of theirs, and I was sad to see that they didn't make it as big as they really should have.
Well, you know, life is like they say, life is not fair, life is short, and life's not easy.
Exactly.
Once you can get used to those three things, then you got it made, man. You got everything
right.
Under control. But
Right. Well, we're good.
No, I didn't have anything, but I was just going to say that, you know. Jim Gillette, I actually go way back with Jim Gillette before he was Jim Gillette, but I won't even go into that story. But he was always a cool dude, and you know, kind of interesting that he, you know, married Lita Ford and so forth. Because
exactly.
I remember back in the 80s, you know, Lita was with Tony Iommi, right?
Was it Blackie Lawless or no, Chris Holmes maybe?
Yeah, Chris Holmes, but also Tony Iommi.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Wow, okay.
You know, it's like a celebrity, you know, thing or whatever. But
sure,
when Death Riders went to Rocklahoma before a tornado came in and blew away all the stages,
right.
you know, we were watching Lita Ford. And, you know, I'm friends with Steph Howland, who's a drummer, and Michael T. Ross, who's a keyboard player. So I don't know if Steph's still with Lita, but I think Michael is. I don't know. I haven't talked to them in a while, but... Great people, and, you know, we got to play with Stett Howland over in Monterey Metal Fest in Mexico in 2005 when he was playing on Wasp. So, I mean, it's a small little world, and it's interesting, but,
sure.
You know, we just love we love going out there and playing live, and we want to get our album out, and, you know, Jonas would be a great opportunity to play with him here, but, you know, I'm writing a lot of songs with Jonas. We've written, you know, quite a large portion of the album together, and, you know, I've also gotten back in touch with a really good friend of mine, Vernon Anderson, who is from the band Invicta up in the Bay Area. So it's been really good to be in touch with Vernon again. And, you know, he has about half the songs on the solo album, Threatcon Delta.
Well, Neil, we're right up against the time here. And uh, I want to I want to talk to you a minute off the air and offer you something for coming up this week, because I haven't even got that half the questions I want to get to you about Death Riders. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to end the show with Crucifixation.
You got it, man. You said it right.
Exactly.
Good job.
And I'll be talking off the air, and for all those out there listening, I appreciate you listening in, and we'll speak to you. We'll hear you. You'll hear us again on Saturday night, possibly with some special guests. This has been All Hail Hair, and this is Death Riders with Crucifixation.